Are you satisfied with your understanding of sustainability? If not, like me, imagine a journey together, a pluralistic one, with innovators, startup, academia, NGO, all together looking for solutions to the greatest challenge of our time. I'm Samuele Tini, and this is the Sustainability Journey.
Thank you so much and welcome to this new episode. So today I have the pleasure to introduce an expert in a bit complex subject. So we have to dig deeper because sometimes, you know, it's good also to go and discuss which are the problems that are really affecting communities and especially women. I want to introduce to you, I hope I pronounce correctly because it's a bit difficult. I want to introduce Tuga Alaskari. Thank you so much, Tuga, for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's really a pleasure to have you here. Your name, it's a bit exotic. Which is your journey? How have you ended up to be an expert? And then we will tell where and in risk finance and insurance solution.
My name is actually from Iraq, where both my parents are from. I was born and raised in London, and I now live in Germany working for the Insure Resilience Global Partnership. And you asked me how I ended up in this space.
Yes. How have you become a leader in sustainability?
As a child of immigrants, I grew up with an awareness that things are not so fortunate for some people. And actually, to be honest, I was driven by guilt. I felt, you know, I'd somehow won the lottery. My parents made it out of Iraq during very difficult times. And I found myself in London with a good education and with a lot of possibilities. So I knew I wanted to do something that was helpful. I didn't necessarily know what. And so I found myself, you know, after university, desperately looking for, I wanted a job with the UN. So I was looking for a job maybe in post-conflict development or something. And I saw something that was really out of the realm of what I was interested in. It was related to food security, which I recognized was important, but I thought, but that's not really me. I'm sort of, you know, more post-conflict and Iraq and something like that. But then I found myself really intrigued by this proposition that was being put forward by the team that I ended up doing an internship with, where they were using early warning systems and technologies to predict the impact of a disaster, and in doing so, mobilize financing before the event even happens through modeling through and setting up these schemes where the money was ready so that governments could assist affected populations very quickly. And for me, this was fascinating when you look at the impact. One of my first tasks in that role, it was with the World Food Programme and then under the umbrella of the African Risk Capacity, it was to actually look at some of the evidence for the developmental impact of that. And it was fascinating. I remember reading about a drought in Zimbabwe in the early 1990s. And 10 years later, when they went back and looked at the households that were affected, they had not reached the economic level that they were at in 1991. So the long-term developmental impact of slow disaster response was huge. So I found this compelling, and more than 12 years later, I'm still very much working in the climate disaster risk finance and insurance space, really trying to promote proactive disaster risk management and using early warning, using risk analysis, and then applying it together with predictable financing mechanisms to ensure that in the event of a disaster, people can be reached in a timely manner before they go into negative coping mechanisms.
Thank you so much, Tuga. I can see that your story and your suffering, because your personal experience led to develop purpose and they wanted to give back. And it's really interesting, your story and how you have become an expert. It really comes into the picture now, your work, because as you say, the disaster response, the finance, the World Food Program, now 12 years ago, and now you are now an insure resilience. So what is insure resilience? Can you explain us? Because I'm sure many people, they are not familiar with it.
So Insure Resilience Global Partnership, we currently have over 100 members, and these are countries, private sector, multilateral development organizations, NGOs, academia. And they sign up to our partnership and rally behind a common vision. The Insure Resilience Global Partnership was established to develop a common agenda so that we could bring all the different great work that's taking place under this umbrella of climate disaster risk finance and insurance and raise the ambition. So we look at scaling up, so having more people covered by disaster risk finance and insurance, but also increasing the impact, making sure we understand how some of the initiatives working in this space are being received and what their developmental impact is and how they can be better linked to other agendas such as risk reduction and ensuring that we are contributing to a broader resilience agenda. So what the Insure Resilience Global Partnership does, and us as the secretariat of the Insure Resilience Global Partnership, is we have this vision, which is collaboratively developed with our members. We set our targets for 2025, and we have a set of indicators that we are measuring progress against. But beyond that, we're also connecting the community. So we look at, for example, the private sector has something to contribute in this space, and they have certain expertise, which is very important. But then linking that to developmental projects to ensure that they have a certain technical assistance element, looking at how they link to the governments that are working in that these projects are serving, and looking how this fits into the strategic framework in the country. So the idea is to bring coherence to the space, to bring greater understanding and fill the knowledge gap toward this vision of scaling up access to disaster risk finance and insurance.
It's a very important topic, especially now that we are heading towards what's the so-called tipping points. It is very important to ensure community are resilient and prepare for this. And I think also the insurance part is quite important to ensure that they can limit and then cope. Your history of Zimbabwe is really, in a way, worrisome, because from 91, after 10 years, they are still suffering, not got back to the same level. And how does it work? You know, it is project-based, it is government-based, because you have mentioned there is the government, there is the private sector, there is the project, the development, you know. How these three components, they work together?
So we are a platform, essentially, that brings together those that are implementing initiatives in this space on the ground, those that are doing research on it, those that are financing it. So we have donors. We have a very strong engagement with V20 countries. So the V20 group of ministers of finance that really give us our mandate and shape our agenda, very much ensuring that it is demand-based. We also have a number of initiatives within the partnership. And what we do is on an annual basis, we also keep stock. You know, we've just come out of COP 26, and you know that in this space, there are many announcements that are made. Very important to have a body that takes stock of the progress. So we have a survey every year to see how globally we are faring against the targets that are set to be achieved by 2025.
Very interesting. And you mentioned the specific programs. That is actually where I think your expertise, your purpose, and your work, they are coming, and you are a change maker. And it's the gender perspective. So you see, you work in the secretariat, but you also are the lead at the Center for Excellence on Gender Smart Solution. What does it mean? You know, what is about the center and why the gender perspective?
So quite early on in the journey of the Insure Resilience Global Partnership, we received a lot of requests from our members looking for resources that could guide better gender-informed and responsive approaches to their work. And so we commissioned a piece of work back in 2018, and it found that there are major gaps in understanding how, two parts actually. So the first part is looking at we recognize, and there is quite a bit of evidence that there is a differential impact of climate shocks on people of different genders. And then the second part of it is there is a major gap in understanding how some of the disaster risk finance and insurance approaches that we have under our partnership, what kind of impact they're having on people of different genders. And so to address this gap, we engaged the members of our partnership, and there was a strong push for us to establish a center of excellence on gender smart solutions that would aggregate the resources that exist and the knowledge that exists on this topic, but also would identify the gaps and commission both research and guidance notes, populate an evidence base, but also start to really address and take action to address these gaps. So one example I can give is that the Center of Excellence has, we actually only were launched at the recent COP just a couple of months ago, but in the lead up to it, we already began work, which became under the framework of the Center of Excellence. We have a program where we identify women in leadership positions within insurance regulatory bodies in countries of the Global South. And these women have a scholarship from us. They join a program at the University of Oxford Said Business School. And what they do is not only do they have training on leadership and diversity and address some of the gender issues and raise their awareness about the nexus between gender and insurance, but they also bring with them an idea, a policy reform that they wish to work on in their own country. And working with experts, they're able to flesh out this idea, receive feedback. And starting next year, the Center of Excellence will add another component to this, which is coaching after the course. So when they go back to their country and they're looking to implement this reform, they could also have certain expertise and support. This is the transformation part. So not only do these women walk away more informed about the gender dimensions, but they're also able to really affect a sector and transform a sector.
So that's already making the impact and walk the talk. In fact, you know, I remember your report and the work that and the launch that you have done at COP26, you know, in the Blue Zone and the discussion that was there. Maybe we can go back and try to see, you know, within the report and then, you know, talking about the gender smart solutions that I think it's really fundamental to really unlock, especially as for me, living, you know, at the grassroots level here in Kenya, working with community, you can see also how women and which are the real, the backbone is, for example, in agriculture and in many sectors in the country. Yeah. So how we can ensure that women are not left behind, you know, that we have discussed that, we have seen at COP, everybody's talking about women, indigenous community, but how we can make sure they're not left behind, how we can do the project differently, and especially ensure then they become resilient with the work and the finance work that you are doing.
One of the pieces we recently commissioned was looking at how to ensure that monitoring and evaluation processes are gender smart. And one of the things that that piece came out with was it's very important not to begin at the monitoring and evaluation stage, which comes quite late in the project cycle, but to actually begin right with at the start. So what is the project team composition that drives and designs the project in the first place? Because this is where we might have the blind spots. This is where if you have a missing perspective from a vulnerable person or any missing perspective, then the project will not be fully informed. And then this is even more important when it's really the missing perspective is the target group. And so we've really tried to challenge ourselves as well in our, even in the process of the research that we're commissioning, to ensure that we don't have those blind spots. So one of the pieces that we have starting, the work will start in January, is a research piece that looks at the poverty-related barriers to accessing climate disaster risk finance and insurance solutions with a gender lens. And we're not doing this ourselves. We're working with a women's group in India who really have and bring a very rich perspective on this topic. And actually, every time we've worked for a long time with them, they're the Mahila Housing Trust. They do remarkable work in disaster risk management, and they work with women very closely in slums in India. And I always learn so much from them. And so when we were setting up the Center of Excellence, we said, could you give us, you know, all your reports and documents and share this, you know, so that we put it on our center? And they said, you know, quite frankly, we don't have this written up very well. They're boots on the ground. They're dealing with emergencies. Every time I talk to them, there's an emergency. In the last 2 years, the corona pandemic has caused them so much strain, and they've had to really rethink their entire projects, but they've reached the people. They will reach the people. They're very, very effective at that. But they're not writing the reports. That's not really, their budget's limited, their scope there. So we're partnering with them to try and actually get those lessons, because we think that they would be very valuable to all of us working in the Issue Resilience Global Partnership, our members, the donors, the multilateral development organizations, the private sector. Everyone can benefit from really taking a closer look and really having this inclusive approach to trying to develop that understanding.
Very interesting. And it's often the case, because I've seen it sometimes also when you work, as you said, you are boots on and you start dealing with the fires up and down, but you don't have this perspective to share and discuss and also set up policies and good practices that can be shared within a broader network. I think your work is commendable there. I liked also the way how we can really design the project differently. And the monitoring evaluation, it's really important, because the biases that we have in setting up projects can be corrected with step by step, and a monitoring evaluation since the beginning, and involving the community, especially women. Sometimes they're left behind because, you know, also maybe the person is writing, they don't, and also the setting up and the context. They might have been context where women are, you know, maybe marginalized. It's really interesting, this part and the work. And of course, we will share in the episode your report. So I think it's widely available so we can discuss and engage. Let me dig deeper, you know, a bit on this part of gender, because your story and your work, it's really important. So, you know, if you can shed a light on your work, especially as a woman in the field of sustainability, in the field of as a change maker, which is your experience?
I think to begin with, you know, and I think a lot of people do this, but early on in my career, I was sort of looking to try and see someone that I respected, admired, and tried to model their behavior. I remember one of the first presentations I ever gave, I sat down and watched the TED talk that my manager had given about our project. This is in a previous work, and I just watched it over and over. And I think that's great, but increasingly, and I think working in this space of gender, I think we really need that diversity. So working in Issue Resilience Global Partnership, it can be a challenge, but a very exciting one, because one minute I'm talking to someone from the insurance sector, and it's very important to try and understand from their perspective what their goals are, how we can find that project that makes sense for both of us. And then similarly, when talking to NGOs or development partners, as a woman, I guess, that's been working in this space, one of the things that I did observe quite early on was a lot of the jobs that we're looking at and taking on have to date been predominantly taken by men. Increasingly, women are taking up a bigger space. And I think it's an opportunity to be a bit creative. And I think, you know, to really forge our own path towards success. And I actually, even this, I mean, this might sound like I'm making an assumption that there is a single way that men are, and I recognize there's diversity across all people, but I think there is a real opportunity to just, you know, one example that comes to mind is that in the pandemic there was quite a bit of commentary on the Prime Minister of New Zealand and the way she was talking about the pandemic, and in a traditionally feminine way, but it had such great appeal in terms of leadership and rallying a country behind you. And I think that this diversity is interesting, and linking it to the work that we do, I think that we can get stuck in models, and we need to really challenge those and keep the dialogue very inclusive. Last week, actually, my colleague told me something which I really would love to share with you. It was a conversation she's had with her professor, I took his name because I thought he needs the credit. So Christos Sironos, he's a professor that taught her some years ago. And he said to her, there's always a blind spot in every strategy of social support and risk reduction. We can call it resilience, we can call it vulnerability, it could be tackling exclusion or whatever you want. But the blind spot is the eye of the vulnerable, and it's the voice of the vulnerable. And our challenge is not only to create a strategy for them, but also with them. And so this is really, you know, in developing solutions, we need to stop thinking about developing solutions for the poor. We need to think about creating an understanding, challenging ourselves collectively to reach an understanding. And that really needs to be rooted in having an inclusive process with the voices of the poor driving us and guiding us.
Very powerful message. And thank you for sharing this personal moment that you had with your colleague. And I really like the eye of the vulnerable. It's a perspective that sometimes, and even me, because for example, in 16 years in Africa or working with project or for you, such a big level on organization, sometimes we assume and it's important to remind ourselves to work together and really build together. So it's really a pleasure. I'm really touched by this. And it will be, I think this is a very strong message that we really need to share and discuss, because without that, it will be very difficult, you know, to achieve our results. So thank you for that. And in fact, I can see, you know, usually we conclude with a message, but it's really this one can be the message of discussion. If you have to get a piece of advice for our audience, you know, apart this wonderful that you have already given from your experience, also from your experience and your story being an immigrant, coming from a difficult land like Iraq, now being at this global level and trying to push gender in a context of business where, you know, it's also difficult, you know, which could be a piece of advice you want to give from your big experience to the audience and the people that are listening to us?
I think it's important to really push ahead and find something you believe in and to really try. One of the projects, actually, I shouldn't name them, but one of my first jobs, I remember when I joined this internship that I told you about, and I was very excited by the idea. I remember someone telling me, you shouldn't put too much effort into that. It's a sinking ship. They're running out of funding and the idea is not gaining traction. Fast forward to now, and they're a treaty-based organization with 36 governments signed up, very successful initiative. And it takes it's important to take those risks if it's something worthwhile. And I would say, even with the Center of Excellence, I think to begin with, you know, we were looking at impressing donors, for example, and we had assumptions about what they might want from us. But actually, as we put forward some of our more, you know, thinking out of the box ideas, we found actually it's possible and there is a lot of interest in really shaking things up. So I think I would say find something you believe in and really try. But listen, always listen. I think that's the thing that we're really trying to do in Ensure Resilience Global Partnership and in the Center of Excellence, recognizing that we are filling a gap, a knowledge gap that we don't have the answers to. And working with others collaboratively is the only way we can move this forward.
Thank you, Tuga. You are given another wonderful piece of advice. And I really like also how this, you know, works at the grassroots level. You know, thinking outside the box and bringing forward your idea. I can recall how many times I brought forward even from some project. Oh, the donor will never like it. And then you see, but this is based with the work with the community. So, and then, you know, if you think outside the box, as you say, then go out to the assumption that is where you can really make a difference and the change. So, no, thank you. Thank you so much, Tuga, because you have given us a wonderful concentrate on to-do list on how to work, develop projects, and be inclusive and really transform the world, not only within the disaster risk and the finance, but even in the practicality.
Thank you, Samuel. I've really appreciated our chat. So thank you for inviting me.
So thank you so much. And Tuga, you know, now the center has been launched last month at the COP. So we will see maybe how it will develop. And, you know, you can always come back. You feel welcome to come back. We always say that for another episode to discuss and see how the research is going and how you are really preparing community, putting priority to women and prepare the community to be more resilient, especially in the wake of our climate crisis. So thank you so much, Tuga.
And thank you.
Are you satisfied after this wonderful episode? Let's continue together our sustainability journey.